This is the woman with the space pig.
And farting aliens.
A companion returns home.
And meets farting aliens.
A prime minister is killed.
By farting aliens.
It's the first two-parter of New Who.
With farting aliens.
It's called Aliens of London. Here we...
Farting aliens of London.
Go!
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Daleks, Cybers, and wow.
Tennant, Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than who back when? Who Back When.
Welcome to N004 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. Today we'll be looking at Aliens of London, the first of a two-part story, and the first two-parter in New Who.
Yes, we are.
Joining me today is disembodied voice of Ponkin, as you've just heard there.
That's me.
How are you?
You know what? I can't complain. It's a good day.
This is good.
How are you doing?
I'm fine, and for those that haven't listened to this before, I'm JD.
Yeah, and normally these episodes start off in a far more structured manner.
And I gave you a perfect opportunity to say, yes, you are there, and you didn't take it. So,
oh, damn it. Oh, the one time.
So, Aliens of London. We'll be splitting this up. It is a two-parter, so we'll be doing it as two separate episodes.
Yep.
So let's jump straight in to our bite-sized chunk of Who.
Bite-sized chunk of Who.
The Doctor brings Rose back to fake London 12 hours after they left, he says, but an unfortunate miscalculation means they've actually arrived 12 months later.
Jackie is reasonably miffed, and Ricky is still a chav. But the fond reunion is cut short when a UFO crash lands into the Thames, tearing Big Ben a new one in the process. And the whole world, by which I mean London, is in a state of panic.
The Prime Minister is also missing, so some other minister, whoever, is appointed temporary PM. And the government assembles every expert on extraterrestrials at number 10 Downing Street, including the Doctor.
Alas, the acting Prime Minister is an alien. The crashed UFO was just a diversion, and now the Earth is in extreme peril. Only one Gallifrey and Doc, his Primark sporting companion, Rose, not Lucy, and an MP from Flydale North can save the day.
You're welcome. Beeskow over.
We managed an entire Beeskow without mentioning farting aliens.
That is really strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's very strange. Well, maybe we just... Whatever.
We are going to be farting alien dead out by the time that this story is over.
I already am. And sadly, these farting aliens, they will return, Nespa.
Sadly, that is very true.
As you can tell, ladies and gentlemen, we were not very fond of the aliens of the week, or the fortnight, rather.
So let us jump straight into the episode, and the Doctor has taken Rose home.
Yes, he has.
So they're back on the Powell estate, and it has been 12 hours after she left. So they left at night, makes sense.
Yeah, that's what the Doctor says anyway.
And so Rose goes off to go and basically get her clothes cleaned by her mum, and the Doc goes...
Probably also kind of give her a hug and say, hey, I know it's only been 12 hours, but I've really missed you, and I'm the best daughter in the world.
Yeah, that's not likely.
Oh, okay, fine.
The Doctor sees a fly on a lamppost, and it seems to have Rose Tyler's picture on it.
It does,
anyway,
in fact.
Rose goes home and basically says, hi mum, spent the night with one of the mates, and then Jackie goes a bit crazy.
She goes totally freaking ape nuts. She like drops a cup of tea, starts hugging Rose like there is no tomorrow, and this is where like the Doctor turns up. He goes, oh yeah, sorry, my bad, it's not been 12 hours, it's been 12 months, you've been gone for a whole year. So next thing we
Cue
know
title sequence.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, yes. Title sequence, blah, 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 blah. Next thing we know, there's a policeman there. Jackie is talking to the police, saying, like, oh, she won't say where she's been. And this weird man who just waltzed in with his leather coat and his dashing good looks just abducted her and blah, 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 blah. And it gets a little bit weird when he refers to her as his companion as well. Like, there's the illusion of, is she some sort of sex worker or, like, what kind of relationship do they have?
Yeah, and it is made clear that it's in a non-sexual sense, but Jackie slaps him.
Yeah.
Full on slaps him.
This is the first time new Doc has been slapped.
This is a couple of firsts.
Oh yeah, yes, there are so many firsts in this episode.
It is the first time that Chris Eccleston's Doctor has been slapped. It is also the first ever episode to take a look at the repercussions of what happens to the companions, because previously, even as far back as Ian and Barbara,
yeah, they return and that's it. We don't get to see what happens.
No, and we know they must have returned about 2-3 years after they left.
Yeah, 2 years later.
All of the new Who companions, so all of the old Who companions, or the classic Who, never really went into this detail.
Yeah, which is actually kind of weird. Sorry, I'm cutting you off there, but that is really weird. I mean, when Barbara and Ian, I remember thinking this at the time, like, did they not have friends? Did they not have family? I mean, they turn up, 2 years have passed, they clearly no longer have their jobs. Like, would they even want to return to their jobs? What are people thinking? What's happened? James Bond can be gone for like 10 months or whatever it was in Skyfall, and they've already boxed up all of his belongings. What happens to Ian and Babs's places when they return 2 years later?
Yeah, and if you look at some of them, there are, let's just take the as a sample size.
Okay.
The first Doctor's companions.
Mm-hmm.
You have Ian and Barbara, who blatantly are, they come back late. What happens to them? You know, as you said, they must have friends. Coal Hill School surely have fired them after not turning in for 2 years and giving no notice.
Yeah.
Susan, we know, doesn't have any family apart from the Doctor, and he just abandons her.
Yeah, but also he abandons her in her relative future. So any repercussions that may have come from her, well, essentially leaving school, all of a sudden cutting class and disappearing for X number of centuries, they're not felt, because her teachers, they're dead. Her classmates, they're dead. The school is pulverized by Daleks. There's no problem there.
Vicky is just abandoned completely, but she, you know, she didn't have any family left anyway, so that's probably not a problem.
Yeah.
Stephen Taylor is basically abandoned, and he probably did have friends. You know, he's a pilot. He's probably got, you know, friends he drinks with.
Yeah, yeah. He probably has a lady in every port.
Yeah. Katerina is just got rid of. Sarah Kingdom is got rid of. They never go back home.
I don't know yet.
Dodo first. She arrives back. She actually does get back home fairly close. But Ben and Polly, the last two of the first Doctor companions, they actually are the first set of companions that arrive back literally 5 minutes after they left.
Huh.
But we never revisit them. We never find out, you know, anything about what happened to them afterwards.
Okay,
we do in New Who.
All right, yes, that's true. But you would assume, I mean, I haven't seen Polly and Dodo and all of those. I mean, any of those. I haven't seen them yet. But you would assume that if you arrive 5 minutes after you left, then the world doesn't, like, the world hasn't noticed anything, but they presumably will have developed, like, some pretty severe mental issues.
Oh, absolutely. There are so many companions in Who just must have gone quite loopy.
Yeah.
Thankfully, New Who really delves into that.
And yeah.
Eventually we'll get into that in School Reunion, which is where Sarah Jane Smith comes back.
Oh yeah, I remember that one.
And that's the first time since this episode where we delve into what happened with a companion. And it's got an emotional impact that Rose's doesn't, because Rose obviously has been away to us for two episodes. Sarah Jane Smith has been away for 20, 30 years. In our time.
Yeah.
And it is a real emotional thing. But old Who, classic Who, never delved into it. So this is a first.
Mm.
Basically, she's been gone for a year. Everyone has moved on around her. You know, there are flyers everywhere in Jackie's flat, missing person, obviously completely distraught. You know, we said in our review of the first episode,
yeah,
that she's probably not exactly a brilliant mother.
No, not necessarily. But we did also say that later on, when they come back, when they visit her, she actually proves that she is of some emotional value.
This is it.
Yeah, you exactly. Know. No, she proves that beyond a shadow of a doubt. The only really weird bits... Sorry, there are two weird bits. Number one is, she's been dating someone, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we never find out who that is. Do we find out later?
No, his name is mentioned in Christmas Invasion, but we never actually see him meet them.
Okay, all right. But so she has tried to move on, at least in that sense. But the weird bit is Mickey, aka Ricky, the Chad boyfriend. At this point, please, let's call him the ex-boyfriend. He was a murder suspect. Like when Rose disappeared, everyone assumed that he had killed her.
We get onto that in a minute, because Mickey hasn't turned up yet.
Yeah, all right, fine, sorry.
The Doc and Rose go onto the luxurious concrete roof
that
of
is
the palace.
So insanely obviously green screened.
Absolutely. it's probably one of our first really poor special effects because it is obviously green screen.
It is very... when I rewatched it now, I was thinking, hang on, this is because they need a London skyline and they're in Wales.
Correct.
Like, are they going to fly them to London for one single shot atop a concrete roof? No, that's not going to happen. So they green screened it.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so they're up there.
The discussion that they're having on the roof happens now. Is Rose going to continue traveling with the doctor? And the doctor puts his foot down and says, no, you can't bring your mother along. and Doc says, well, I'm 900 years old.
Yeah.
And then Rose just this is just hitting Rose one thing after another here.
Yeah.
Because she didn't consider what she was doing when he left at the end of Rose.
Yeah, that's true. She sees the actual repercussions that it's had for her mother. Weirdly, though, she's not spending this time with her mum. She is still up on the roof with the Doc.
Because her mother is probably downstairs calming down.
Okay, all right, that is fair. I want to point out one thing, though, and it's a very good thing that you told me off earlier on for bringing up Mickey Ricky, because they still haven't.
No.
I mean, she now knows a year has passed. She's seen what kind of consequence it had for her mum, but she hasn't even cared to ask where Mickey is.
Nope, she doesn't bring it up. Luckily, we never get to find out whether she was going to say that next, as a large spaceship flies over the Powell estate and then crashes into Big Ben and then into the Thames.
Yep, bingo bongo.
The Doc heads off with Rose to go and investigate, but sadly, it's just completely cordoned off. They can't get to it.
Yeah, it's like Independence Day. Like, everyone's on the street. Weirdly, you still see people on the street who are just like, oh, fucking traffic, man. Like, this is... a spaceship has just crashed into one of the Kodak Moment buildings of London. Clearly, everyone knows. Like, there cannot be a single form of media out there that is not screaming UFO crash landing. But there are still people who are obviously concerned by, like, I'm going to be late for work. Oh no, my Coke's gonna get warm. I can't think of anything good to say there, but what I mean? Like, people are actually just annoyed by traffic.
And they are. And, you know, but Rose and basically asks the question that we are all asking at this point, which is, why don't you just teleport inside in the TARDIS?
Yeah.
And the Doctor says, well, an alien's just landed in the Thames. I don't want to be the next alien to land. You know, it's not quite right. So then Rose makes the ultimately sensible suggestion of, let's go and watch it on BBC News 24.
Yeah. So bada bing, bada boom, they're back in the Powell estate. They're now checking it out on the telly, and slowly but surely, the living room is filling up with chavs. And what they see on the telly is they've recovered some sort of body from the spaceship. By the way, we get to see two different... Is it now that we see both reporters? Both television reporters? There's one British and one American.
Yeah, I don't know the American one, but the British one is Andy Marr.
Yeah, he's an actual...
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're reporting. The American one, though, gotta say, and I did actually look her up online, she...
Oh, Trinity Wells.
Yeah. Yeah, she's played the same role, the same US TV reporter in Doctor Who, Torchwood, and Sarah Jane...
Correct, yes. Trinity's been in all three. She's got a fairly good thing going here of she's not also just in this episode. She is in, I think, at least three or four other ones, because she goes through the entirety of the Russell Davis sort of era being American reporter.
Yeah, but also the most... I'm really sorry, Trinity, but in this first part of the two-parter, holy crap, she looks like the most tired US newscaster ever. Like, this poor woman has not been allowed to sleep or literally do anything but report the news for, like, the past 12 years. She couldn't look more sleepy anyway. So they're now saying they've recovered a body from the UFO. It's been taken to some hospital. Albion Hospital, is it? I think so.
It is definitely Albion Hospital.
Okay, boom. Albion Hospital. And the esteemed General Asquith is now arriving at the hospital to check it out. Who plays General Asquith, JD? I predict there's some JD actor trivia coming up.
Asquith is played by Rupert Van Sittert.
Oh, really? Has he been in anything else?
Who has played Sepulchre in Dead London.
Yes, which I believe is your favourite Doctor Who audiobook.
Thankfully, he actually plays a character in this that I like. So, this is not my least favourite episode of Doctor Who, whereas Dead London nearly is. So, Rupert Van Sittert, who has voiced Sepulchre in the Paul McGann audiobooks.
Yeah.
We see this, and...
Oh, sorry, there's one more thing we find out from the newscaster. The Prime Minister is missing.
Yes, we do. But we also find out something else on this. Basically, during this sort of set of information that we get from the television, we then cut to Albion Hospital, as you just mentioned. And the alien is going to basically be examined by someone called Dr. Sato.
Yes, okay, actor trivia alert.
Yes.
Hit us, dude, hit us.
Sato is played by Neko Mori.
Yes.
Who would go on to play Toshiko Sato.
Yeah.
In Torchwood.
Same character, right?
Same character.
Literally the same character, yeah.
And what happens in the episode of Torchwood called Exit Wounds, we actually get a flashback by Toshiko to this episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because Bern Gorman's character in Torchwood, Owen, is meant to be the one who's examining the alien because he's the doctor in Torchwood. She's the tech expert.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right.
And we find out that Owen is hungover, so he asks Toshiko Sato to go in his place.
And then flashbacks come up.
Yeah, okay. So that's in Exit Wounds in Torchwood.
Oh, I need to rewatch Torchwood.
So we find out that there's been no sign of the Prime Minister. So one of the other MPs, who is the, believe it or not, the chairman of one of the parliamentary commissions, he's not very high up at all, has become the acting Prime Minister.
Yeah.
You know, he's got some people around him, and while one of his secretaries, who's called Indra Ganesh, who is played by Navin Chowdhury. Navin Chowdhury has been on an awful lot of British television miniseries, including something called Synchronicity.
Oh, you've mentioned this before.
Yes, I accidentally got it wrong. And last time I said that Noel Clarke was in Synchronicity when he wasn't. He was in Metrosexuality.
Yes,
I corrected it at the
you
time.
You did correct yourself, yeah, yeah.
But he's been in Synchronicity.
Oh, bingo bongo.
Which is quite... So he's been in Synchronicity with someone else.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Who?
Camille Kadjuri.
No
Jackie
freaking
Tyler.
Way. Oh my God, those two should just be high-fiving on set all day long.
So Navin Chowdhury and Camille Kadjuri were both in Synchronicity.
Okay.
So then, while Indra Ganesh is basically briefing Joseph Green breaks wind.
This is now the first of approximately 7,300 farts that will feature in this double episode.
Then turning up.
Yes, bingo. Harriet Jones.
Not yet.
Okay.
No.
Oh, sorry.
Next turning up is Margaret and Oliver Charles.
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry.
So
I apologize. I'm just so freaking excited about Harriet Jones.
Two more. Margaret Blaine is from MI5 and Oliver Charles is Transport Secretary.
Margaret Blaine.
Margaret played by Annette Badland. Now.
Yeah, who has a fantastic surname. I mean, holy crap. Badland?
She has, you know.
Insanely awesome.
Annette Badland is absolutely brilliant. You know, she's one of these British actresses who has been in practically everything over the past sort of 20 to 30 years. She's a good, hard British actress.
Okay,
she's,
that may well be true, but her character, her appearance in this show, very much strikes me as sort of a poor man's Judi Dench's M.
Yes, that's exactly who it's meant to be.
Oh.
Sadly, it's still played by Annette Badland, so it's better than it could be. And she's not been in Doctor Who before, but she will go on to be in another children's TV show called Wizards and Aliens, which was also written by Russell T. Davis.
Ah, that's, yeah, I've heard of it.
Moving on.
Bingo bongo. So, do they now get, like, the red briefcase with the quote-unquote emergency protocols?
And then they go into the cabinet office and start giggling.
Yeah.
For no reason at this point.
Yeah, so clearly something very shifty is going on with these people. Something else, maybe, let's see if we can find a common theme for these three, aside from their flatulence. Actually, you know, we haven't heard Poor Man's M or the other dude break wind just yet. But aside from their flatulence, spoiler alert, those two are also going to be farting ad nauseum, literally. But aside from that, they're all also of a certain... Let's say that they're corpulent. Like, they are...
Rotund.
Yes. They're almost spherical. They are...
And this is deliberate. We are not making fun Annette Badland or any of these people's weight.
No,
this is very deliberate.
Yes, it is very deliberate. But imagine the casting. I mean, imagine the casting process where they go like, okay, so we need to find someone who is... No. You know what? We need someone who's more than Rubenesque. We need someone who is quite voluminous.
Yes.
Oh, we've got Mrs. Badland. We have that other guy no one knows his name.
David Berry.
That's the guy.
Thankfully, at this point, to save the day, the MP for Flydale North, Harriet Jones, played by the superb Penelope Wilson.
Oh, thank God. People who don't know who she is, okay, I'm assuming you've seen Shaun of the Dead. She plays the mum. She was in the, what's it called, the Royal Marigold Hotel?
The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Bingo,
she was
bongo.
She was in Downton Abbey.
She was in Downton Abbey. Was she in Calendar Girls?
Yes, she was. She was in Calendar Girls. She was in Pride and Prejudice. She was in History Boys.
History Boys, yes.
Yes, she was in History Boys.
She's a wonderful actress.
The main role she's done was a comedy for 5 years in the 80s called Ever Decreasing Circles, which is, you know, a good, hardy British comedy sitcom.
Huh? I don't know. I've never heard of this one. Okay, cool.
It was with Richard Bryars. You know, she is a phenomenal British actress.
Yeah.
And thankfully, this is not her only episode.
Yeah, I know. Thank God. So she turns up, she's got some new proposal for whatever, small countryside hospitals. Who gives a damn? Of no consequence whatsoever. But she wants to present the papers to the acting PM. He just brushes it off and goes like, good Lord, woman, have some perspective. Just leave me be. And then they all walk off. So now she is outside the cabinet office, unattended. And inside the office is the red briefcase. There is not a single guard. There is no one around. No one has remarked on the fact that the acting PM has just left the briefcase in there. Let's just leave the MP for Flydale North on her own.
And she starts to read the papers.
Yeah, she does. Cut to the doctor and Rose.
And basically the doctor has had enough of Jackie. He wanders off. Rose is a bit pissed and says, well, you're going to get in your TARDIS and leave now, aren't you? And he basically mollycoddles her and gives her a key.
Which is awesome. He lives in that TARDIS. This is essentially like going, listen, here's a drawer where you can put your clothes. I got you a toothbrush. Like, essentially, she's moving in now. This is awesome.
Yes. She goes back to her house and... The doc heads to the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Anyway, also living in the Powell estate is Mickey Smith.
Fuck.
And he runs down. He gets to the TARDIS, but the TARDIS dematerializes.
Yeah.
And the TARDIS rematerializes in Albion Hospital.
Bingo.
The doctor comes out and eventually runs into a group of squaddies who are on a tea break, and there was about to be some shooting, but Toshiko Sato is screaming.
Yeah, but okay, hang on. Need to preface this with something else. Dr. Sato is in a mortuary where all the lights are turned down low because you can't have proper lighting in a mortuary.
No,
and
you can't.
She's like doing paperwork or whatever, and all of a sudden, the alien body, the recovered body, starts, I guess, moving inside its little storage thingy. There's a massive noise, like, you kind of imagine the thing inside banging against the door, trying to get out. And she just sort of casually walks up to the door. She is, okay, trepidatiously walks up to the door, but she doesn't alert the guards. She doesn't do anything. There is so much noise. The fucking soldiers are drinking tea and playing cards, and they don't hear the noise. Okay, now go on. Ladies and gentlemen, JD is looking at me with a look of utter dismay.
All of that was true.
It is true. Yeah. This is a striking indictment of UK military service.
Toshiko is screaming, so the doctor is just instantly in charge.
Bingo.
And they basically go to the morgue and find the alien, and it looks like a pig in a spacesuit.
Yeah.
It is a space pig. And it squeals and runs off.
Yeah.
And then gets shot.
One of the soldiers just blammos it.
The doctor is quite upset by this.
Yeah, he's like, oh, it was scared. What did you do that for?
He and Toshiko have a little bit of a bonding moment over a dead pig, and they come to the conclusion that the pig, the technology that is in the pig, is alien.
But the pig itself is a pig. Exactly.
So it is a UFO, which is faking a UFO.
Yeah, exactly.
Doc goes away.
No wonder Sato is just like PTSDing all over the place when she thinks back at this whole pig encounter. It's pretty creepy. It's like the Frankenstein of piglets.
It is.
Someone took Babe, shoved a radiator into its brain, and then put it in a spacesuit.
But in a way, for when we figure out what happens later in this season, this place is actually the perfectly creepy place for it to happen in. Albion Hospital will return.
Oh?
In the second of the two-parters this season, and the far more spectacular one called The Empty Child and the Doctor Dances.
Ooh, okay, yeah, yeah.
And that is also set in Albion Hospital.
So we will come
to that later in the season. Anyway, cut back to number 10 Downing Street.
Yeah.
Harriet realises that she probably shouldn't be reading through the papers or be in the cabinet office, so she goes to hide in the cupboard.
Mm-hmm, clever.
And the rotund trio are now talking to Rupert Vansittart's character, General Asquith.
Yeah.
And he is shouting at Joseph Green and going, well, you make a shit temporary prime minister. You're not answering my calls. Why did you cancel the senior cabinet ministers coming to London in the helicopter? There are no emergency procedures being done. I've read the booklet. You're not doing any of them. Then
At which point, go for it.
The trio start farting.
They start farting. Fucking hell. Why did you have to write farting into this episode?
It's not needed.
It really isn't. The double episode would be greatly improved without the slapsticky farting. But yeah, anyway, so they start farting. General Asquith basically goes, what the hell is going on? At which point, Green Air starts unzipping his head.
Yes, because basically, Asquith has basically said, I'm going to remove you from power. I'm going to put martial law in.
Oh, yeah.
And then he goes, they start unzipping.
Yeah. Well, there's the stupid one-liner about, like, oh, that's just hair-raising. No, literally, hair-raising. And then he literally raises his hair. It is very silly. Okay, let's just have a tiny tangent where we go through the logistics of this, because what they've done is, essentially, they've hollowed out humans, right? They're wearing human skin, and they've got some device that compresses them, because they are huge aliens, but they've got some device that compresses them, allowing them to fit inside a portly human, hence why everyone is somewhat corpulent. However, some of these human casings have an actual zipper. Like, there is an actual zip, like it's a jacket or something. How does that work?
I cannot physically tell you. It makes very little sense when you dig deep into the physics of it, so I'm not going to.
Okay, fair.
I'm instead going to complain about the writer of the episode.
Okay.
This was actually written by Russell T. Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Russell has done some spectacularly good episodes as a writer.
Mm.
He did Rose. He will be doing Doomsday.
Yeah, no argument here. Seriously.
He has done The Waters of Mars, which is generally considered to be superb.
Oh, and I love that episode.
And he also wrote my single favourite episode of New Who, which is Turn Left.
Which one's that?
It's the Donna... You don't like Donna Noble.
Oh, yeah, we've had this conversation before.
Yes, this will be our Edge of Destruction moment.
Oh, brilliant.
he's also written some utter tripe.
Well, evidently.
Yes, some complete and utter tripe, including my least favourite episode of Who ever.
Which is?
Which is worse than The Web Planet.
Oh, okay.
It's called Love and Monsters.
Oh, yeah, you've mentioned that on the podcast as well.
So we will get to these. But Russell T. Davis brought Doctor Who back.
Yeah, he did.
And he had, so far, he'd done Rose. Stunning. End of the World, we quite liked.
Yeah.
He didn't do Unquiet Dead, and then he did this. And this is where we find out that Russell T. Davis is a very up-and-down writer.
Okay.
Because this is... You accused Rose of being childish in places.
Yeah.
The episode, not Rose Tyler. And I disagreed with you. Whereas I think this episode is incredibly childish.
Yeah,
in
super,
many places.
Yeah, exactly. No, the aliens themselves, they are two completely separate aliens. One is like the serious, badass, incredibly violent, hugely destructive, and quite scary monster. And the other one is something that farts that is just there because there are kids in the audience.
This episode could have been done significantly better with one other alien race.
Which one?
Nestine Duplicates, Autons.
Oh, bingo. Right, so we've got like a Rose meets Aliens of London.
Yes.
Yeah.
Had this have been a continuation of Rose, with the Autons still being around.
Yeah.
And the Nestine Duplicates, which they know they can do, including in, you know, that audiobook we absolutely raved about, and in Terror of the Autons. And you've got all of this. So,
yeah.
You know, Brave New Town, Terror of the Autons, Spearhead from Space, Rose, all had duplicates being done very much like this. Had this had been an Auton episode, we would be raving about it because we wouldn't have farting.
Yeah, that's true. And the Autons would have been given more credence in a way.
Yes. So
no, I think that's a very good point. That's a good suggestion. Retroactive advice to the production team of Aliens of London.
Let's skip now away from our farting aliens.
Okay. And wait, no, because I don't know if we said this. They kill Asquith, hollow him out, and throw they throw some skin. I can't remember. Oh, it's not poor man's M, and it's not green. It's the other dude.
It's Joseph.
Bingo. They throw Joseph's skin.
Is it Oliver? It's the one who's the transport secretary.
Okay, right. Transport secretary's skin gets shoved into the cupboard where Harriet is hiding, and former transport secretary now sports Asquith's skin.
So we skip to Mickey.
Yeah.
Entering Jackie Tyler's home. And I know you don't like Mickey, but this is
Don't tell me that this is a good portrayal.
Good reaction.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because basically, what you said earlier has come to pass. Because Rose is sitting there with all of Jackie's mates watching the TV. She hasn't spoken to him.
Yeah.
Hasn't gone to see him. And he was accused of her murder.
Yeah. Well, no one's even mentioned him. Like, literally no one there cares about Mickey. In the year that has passed, for some reason, and I'm sorry I missed this, but for some reason, everyone's eyes just opened and they realized what an absolute idiot he is.
And Jackie blamed him for Rose going missing.
Yeah.
But Mickey kept Rose's secret.
Yeah.
He really does love her.
Oh, no, I don't doubt that. He is slowly but surely growing into a likable character, but he is not there yet, dude.
And so anyway, he basically says to Rose, just fucking admit the truth here. You've got all of these people telling them you went off with an alien in a spaceship.
Yeah.
Because the doctor's gone. Because he saw the TARDIS dematerializing.
Yeah.
And Rose just goes, no, he wouldn't leave me behind.
He even gave me the key. So they're now where the TARDIS used to be, and Mickey is basically just going, so you dumped me for this other guy who's far more handsome and debonair, and now he's dumped you. So who's the fool now? At which point, Kablamatron, the TARDIS, rematerializes.
But standing behind Mickey Smith and Rose Tyler is Jackie.
Yep.
Who sees
Everything.
So basically, the doc is at the console and Rose comes in.
Yeah.
Flanked by Mickey and the mother.
Yeah.
And then Jackie does what any sane person does in this situation and runs the hell out of the bigger on the inside.
I disagree. I don't think that's the best course of action here.
It's what most people would do.
Dude, no, absolutely not. Especially not the mother of a girl who's just reappeared after a year's absence, probably as a consequence of having been in this thing. She wouldn't run off on her own. She would, at the very least, she would grab Rose by the arm and try to pull her out of the TARDIS as well.
I think she's just in shock, and she's got PTSD now.
Yeah.
So basically, Jackie goes back to her flat and starts literally just rotating in her own grave at this point.
Yeah.
She is just, like, not believing anything which happens.
Yeah, at which point she sees on the telly another news report by, I guess, the sleepiest English news reporter. And he says, if you have any news whatsoever, if you have any information about this UFO, call the hotline below. Wait, really? Every nutcase in Britain at this point is calling that number going, seriously, I've been wearing styrofoam hats for decades and no one believed me, but now a pig's crashed in the Thames. But she dials the number. Jackie dials the number. She gets through and she says, basically she drops a few like key words. She says, it's bigger on the inside. It looks like a phone, like a police box. And the doctor has taken my daughter. He's an alien.
Back inside our TARDIS, the doctor is talking to Ricky.
Yeah.
Because he can't actually remember Mickey's name.
Yeah. This is very Hartnell, by the way.
Oh, yes. The Chesterfield sofa.
Yeah.
What are you doing, Chesterton? Chesterfield. I don't know what I'm doing anymore. Yes, it is. We get the exposition point that this is that the doctor tells Rose and Mickey that it was fake.
Yeah.
And then Mickey has a very sensible suggestion and point that you're trying to start an invasion and putting everything on high alert makes no sense.
Yeah.
And that's actually quite true.
And the Doctor hasn't figured it out yet either.
And at this point, Rose almost becomes likable because she hasn't been for the past 15 minutes and says, right, I did miss you, Mickey. And, you know, I've only actually been gone for a few days.
I don't buy it. I don't buy it. She might be a little bit horny. Maybe that's it. But I do not buy it for a second.
And then basically he says he never dated anyone else. And he couldn't because most people think he murdered her and buried her body in the woods.
Yeah.
The doc has finished his magic.
Yeah.
And basically we find out that the spaceship landed on Earth, but in fact was launched from Earth.
From Earth as well, yeah. Is this where we get a cutscene of UNIT headquarters where they have, or is, I don't know if it's UNIT, but either way, we get a cutscene of, it's essentially the Patriot Act where they've, like, they've picked up on these keywords that Jackie mentioned on the phone. So the second she says doctor and police box in the same sentence or something to that effect, lights start flashing at number 10 Downing Street. And so now, long story short, Doc, Rose and Ricky, they exit the TARDIS, and Kablamatron, there are just UNIT soldiers and helicopters freaking everywhere.
And Mickey has got a good point at this point, just before they get arrested.
And he runs and hides.
Well, yes, he goes and hides, but before that, he actually reveals he spent a year researching the Doctor.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, you're totally right, yes.
He mentions that the Doctor once worked for UNIT, so that's the Pertwee era, basically.
Yeah, and but he does also, I think, say something like, well, you know, your name does pop up in a lot of historical documents. Yeah, no shit, Ricky. People have mentioned doctors in history.
Yes, but, you know, we know from Clive and in the episode one that he is traceable.
Yeah, okay,
but
that is
the
true.
Doctor worked for UNIT, but the Doctor is now just avoiding UNIT.
Yeah, why?
Well, the Doctor explains it's because he's changed a lot since the old days.
Oh, does he say that?
Yes.
Okay.
And that, which is quite
which
fair.
Is, yeah, I was going to say, that is completely true.
So anyway, and now the Doctor basically says to Rose, yeah, I've been to this planet quite a lot, and basically I get noticed nowadays.
Yeah.
So they get to 10 Downing Street. They go inside, and basically they are not being arrested. They're honoured guests. Or the Doctor is an honoured guest.
Yeah.
The Doctor gets an ID card. He gets, you know, sort of like waved into briefings, whereas Rose is just, you know, you're the secretary going sit in the corner.
Yeah, but luckily, she doesn't. Yeah, sorry, no, take it away.
But luckily, on hand, there is someone who had listened in earlier to the name The Doctor. And she is here to save the day.
Oh,
and
Harriet.
Rose is grabbed by Harriet Jones, MP for Flyerdale North.
And which is how she introduces herself every single time. It is so charming.
And then they go out into another one of the rooms, and basically, Harriet breaks down into tears,
yeah,
saying, there's bodies and aliens and zippers and skins. So, right, Rose is doing the Lucy Miller thing right now of bonding with the female NPC, which is, you know, let's be honest, in an audiobook, would be played by Katarina Olsen.
Oh, yeah, undoubtedly.
So, you know, this is the reason. Katarina Olsen isn't in New Who because Russell T. Davis, you know, didn't get into the bondage closet.
Russell, you don't know what you're missing.
So.
And sadly, nor do we. I would love to know what goes on in there.
If you're wondering why we're talking about bondage closets, please go and listen to any of the audiobook reviews.
Yeah.
Rose and Harriet go off and basically find a body. Who is Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Now, bit of episode trivia, they hired someone who was to look as close to Tony Blair as possible.
Oh, really?
It's failed, because he doesn't look anything like Tony Blair.
Yeah, but no, that's definitely true. Not that you'd get that much of even a glance at him.
They were meant to, they tried to hire someone, so they eventually ended up adding a line in, because Tony Blair was quite famous for, when he got into power, bringing in a set of female MPs, which were called Blair's Babes.
Mm-hmm.
And Harriet, in one of her lines, says, yes, I'm an MP, but I was never one of the babes, indicating that the dead one is actually Tony Blair. So,
can we also, wait, hang on, before we progress from the dead Tony Blair lookalike in the closet, can we please just point out that not only can Harriet from Flydale North walk in and read classified papers without anyone stopping her, but apparently, and this has been going on for a while, like, the Prime Minister, his entire car just suddenly disappeared. No one knows what happened to him. He's just disappeared off the face of the earth. He is the Prime Minister, and his body is in a closet in the cabinet office at number 10 Downing Street, and no one has found him. Like, it's not like he was chopped into bits and, like, scattered across the aisles. He's in the fucking building. He's in a closet. He's still wearing his suit. He's still not looking like Tony Blair. And no one has noticed that he is right there.
And, apart from our two heroines, who now notice the dead body...
How are you not upset by this?
I'm balanced.
Okay.
The Ganesh turns up.
Yes. Oh, yes, he does.
And he starts basically screaming at the dead body as well. And then poor man Zem turns up.
Yep.
And closes the door very calmly and basically says, yes, I lied about escorting the Prime Minister to his car.
Yeah.
And then she starts unzipping herself.
Yeah. At the same time, mind you, I think we may have skipped a few things, but at the same time, like, there are parallel lines here. So at the same time, the doctor is downstairs with all the other experts, and they've all been made to wear these name tags. Oh, and I guess they're meant to have some sort of presentation or chat with the acting Prime Minister and Asquith, who are, like, front center stage. And the doctor stands up. He starts talking and says, like, well, there was the signal and apparently something was launched from the North Sea and there was a Russian satellite that picked it up, but then there was a UFO crash and everyone seemed to have forgotten about this rocket that launched from the North Sea. What was that about? At which point, parallel to poor man's M unzipping her face, Asquith starts unzipping his face. And now it turns out...
And parallel to these...
Yeah, go for it. Oh, yes. Holy shit, we've totally missed what's happening to Jackie. Go for it, dude.
Jackie, who phoned in this thing about the doctor,
yeah,
is being questioned by a large guy who farts a lot.
Yeah, I wonder what's up with that.
So the guy, Strickland, sends the other police officers away so he can question Jackie. Jackie then basically explains that she doesn't know much about him, but then Strickland says, you know, the doctor is trouble.
Yeah.
Anyone associated with the doctor is trouble. And he also starts to unzip.
Yep. Pretty hot. So now
and
we've
so
got...
So now we actually see the unzipped aliens.
Yeah. We see the CGI version of them first. Yeah. They are these... I'm presuming you've seen the episode. If you haven't, then check the website for screenshots and whatnot. They are these massive... They look like big deformed babies with, like, bobbleheads. Huge arms. Massive claws that make, like, razor noises when they... when they touch.
Yeah, they look both threatening and obviously laughable at the same time.
Yeah.
The Slovene, which is what they're going to be called eventually, attacks Jackie at
yep.
the power state. And Ep Adlin's Slovene basically kills Ganesh.
Yeah. It also disrobes from her human skin and does so very slowly. And Rose, Flydale North, and Ganesh, they're just standing there, mouths agape,
Rose
staring.
Rose is no better. Rose yeah. has met aliens.
Why are they not running off? Why are they not going, holy fuck, man, there's an alien in that woman?
Even more stupid than that is the doctor doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Because they disrobe slowly.
Yeah.
And the doctor is just standing there. And then, before the doctor can actually do anything, even though it's been 5 minutes since the guy started taking his skin off, all of the ID cards become electrified.
Yeah, exactly. So now everyone's being electrocuted, basically. And that's the cliffhanger. That's it. Boom. End of episode. Deep sigh.
Reviews.
Do you want to go first?
Okay. It's an episode of two halves, this.
Mm.
There are two plots here. One is the return to Earth of Rose.
Yep.
And the second one is the Slovene. I'm going to mark the two plots separately and then average them.
Sounds spiffing.
I think it is the fair thing to do.
Okay.
So, the Slovene plot. I hate the aliens. They are not brilliantly thought out. They are childish. And they are not even logically consistent. their plan for... Well, we'll find out what the plan is in the next episode, but it's pointless. So, ultimately, I give the Slovene plotline a 1.1.
Wow.
So, we'll move on to the other plotline.
Okay.
Which is the return to Earth of Rose. First time it's ever happened. I actually think it's fairly well done. I actually think that I felt sorry for Mickey, and Rose is just a bitch. It is the first time we actually deep dive into a companion returning and the after effects of it and how it affects the family, how it affects their friends. For that alone, I'm giving that bit of a plotline a 4. Now, therefore, this episode gets a, let's say, 2.5.
Okay, 2.5. All right. Essentially, I agree with you. I'm not going to do the averaging out, even though, yes, you're right, right, that is the fair thing to do, but I dislike this episode enough to not want to implement any level of sportsmanship here. I appreciate the return of Rose. I think they have markedly improved the realism of plucking someone out of their own timeline and then popping them back. I don't know if on previous occasions companions have gone back to Earth sort of now and then and seen what's going on before they leave the Doctor, but not as far as I remember anyway from my childhood. But in this case, I think it is fantastic. I think if she had returned only 12 hours later the way the Doctor had planned, it would have been pointless. I mean, you would have had the clash with Mickey, but you wouldn't have had that incredible emotional tension that you get with Jackie. I think that's amazing. I love that little bit. That being said, I fucking hate Mickey. I absolutely hate him as a character still. I will enjoy him at some point, but at the moment, I think he is still the chavvy douchebag that I don't want to see on screen. So I could have lived without that. Cut to the alien invasion. The Slovene are moronic. They fart. Negative points for that. Their plan is to... Well, we don't actually know what their plan is yet, but we see them executing whatever plan they have in episode one here. And it is... dumb. We get units, they turn up, that's fantastic, fan service, plus they're going to turn up later on as well, but they are supremely disorganized, there is absolutely no logic behind anything that they do, and everything that goes on with police, with security, with unit, with soldiers, and around number 10 Downing Street is completely and utterly childish. Negative marks. Fuck it, I could go on and on and on. I love Flydale North. I hate poor man's M. I love Rose. I hate farting. I'm giving it a 2.2. I want to see a Chris Nolan reboot of this because I think it actually has potential as a story, but it's just too childish.
Autons.
No, I think that's a fantastic suggestion. I think that's a great idea.
Not going to disagree, obviously, with your points, and I'm going to just pick up on a couple of the items which you've said about the companions going back. Joe Grant.
Yeah.
Who was John Pertwee's second companion. She was basically based on Earth and went off to adventures on other planets.
Is this during the time when the Doctor was exiled?
Yeah, yes.
Right. Okay.
So he did that. Sarah Jane Smith did that. But what we never saw then, it was basically them based on Earth going off for adventures.
Okay, that's very different.
The first time we get it is with a character called Tegan Javanka, played by Jenna Fielding in the Peter Davison era.
Sounds hot.
She was my favourite companion. I cried when she left.
Oh, I want to hug past JD.
At the end of an episode called Time Flight, Tegan leaves. She doesn't intend to leave. She's just basically late for the Doctor picking her up. You know,
he has a time machine, though.
Yes, but he just thinks she wants... He at this point thinks she wants to go and start her life again.
Oh, I see.
Because he's got her finally back to Heathrow Airport. And the next episode is an episode called Arc of Infinity, which is set in Amsterdam. It is a few months after Time Flight.
Okay.
And Tegan's here because she's basically been fired from her job as a air hostess, and she's backpacking. You know, that is the first time we ever see repercussions. Basically, she was fired from being an air hostess on the grounds that, well, she appeared for the job like a year late. But that's the first time. It's only mentioned once in Arc of Infinity.
Okay.
It's never followed up on, and that's basically the first time we ever saw it.
Well, at least they acknowledged that there must be consequences.
Yeah, but not anything to this extent.
Okay.
Reviews!
Listener minis.
Well, we say reviews. We actually have two reviews, which are for the combined Aliens of London and World War III.
Yes.
So to keep you on tenterhooks and to bring you back at this same bat time, same bat channel, we will be reading out the reviews from Davis
and Gallifreyan Buccaneer
next time on an all-new exciting episode of Who Back When?
A Doctor Who podcast.
You're welcome, people.
Anticipation is everything.
Next time we have World War III, which is sadly more farting aliens.
Sadly, so, I don't know yet if I'm going to be releasing it immediately after this, or same day, or day after, or a week later. You're just going to have to wait and see.
But you might be listening to an audiobook, a classic Who or a new Who next. Who can tell? But either way, if you want to find out, you can find out by following us on Facebook.
Yes, and you
liking,
can.
And liking our page there.
It's facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word.
If you want, you can go to Reddit @ / Who back when?
Are people still doing that?
Yes.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks, guys.
We also are on Google Plus, which no one is using.
No, and I hadn't actually updated that page for a couple of weeks.
But yeah,
no
point in carrying on with that. But
Plus Who Back When. Check it out.
And you can, of course, follow us on Twitter. He is at Ponkin.
Yes, I am. Say hi.
And I am
at Marius Kane. That's Kane with a K.
And we have been Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast.
Thank you for listening. Rock on. Bye-bye.
Who Back When.